Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to this program Merlin Kay from the Reading Group in Urbana. She's director of the organization and has been since 1978. Now, she has been on this program before a number of times, although not in a while, to talk about the kind of things that they do at the Reading Group, which is an organization that is dedicated to helping people. Could be either adults or children, but I think mostly what we're talking about is children, helping children who have difficulty in reading and writing, and providing a kind of a one-on-one instruction with those kids. The key idea, something we've talked about many times, the key idea is that the success, the child of success, is going to have a lot to do with tailoring the approach to that child. The idea here is that different kids have different ways of learning, and to help them learn, it takes a different approach, which sometimes can't happen in a regular school classroom just because there's one teacher and there may be 20 or 30 kids. And so the Reading Group has always been there to try to provide some additional assistance, one-on-one assistance, to kids who have special kind of needs. And over the years, we've talked about a lot of things, basically one way or another. It's been about helping kids who have some kind of learning problem, or because of their learning style, they're finding it difficult to succeed in school. And we will talk again, I'm sure, about some of these things here this morning. Particularly, we thought we would talk about helping kids who are reluctant readers. And I guess by that we mean children who want to read, but who for some reason, and it can be different with every child, find it really difficult and frustrating. So as we talk this morning, questions are certainly welcome. We have a number here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I think that it's certainly a point worth making that I'm sure when you first began the Reading Group, now these so many years ago, it wasn't this kind of understanding about different kids, different learning styles, needing to tailor your approach to them. I'm not sure that it was as widespread as it is now. I think now people understand that and get that, but I'm not sure that that even in 1978, that's, you know, we're getting like more than 20 years ago. It was not, that idea wasn't as much out there.
You're right, David. I think that you have a very good understanding of some of the issues right now, but longer ago, there were very few people who understood that there could be some very intelligent children with puzzling learning problems. It was either a case of, you know, black and white. You were either a bright student or a dull student, a fast learner or a slow learner. But they didn't have this way of looking at very specific problems. I'm not saying that we need to label each of these problems, but we certainly need to recognize that as we look at a child, we see both their gifts and their difficulties or disabilities. I tend not to like to use that word too much because it sounds like if it's a disability, what can you do about it?
Right.
And it certainly is a learning difference, though.
Yeah. And I suppose that when we had in the past, and maybe still now, if you have kids who seem to have difficulty reading, they may mask that difficulty simply by saying I don't like reading, or they say I don't find anything I'm really interested in, or they're maybe not as likely to say, look, I'm really actually having a hard time with the physical act of reading. They just say, oh, reading, I don't like reading.
Yeah, they'll often say it's boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. They'll often also try to be, well, they're very clever at distracting the people around them by sometimes being very silly or actually bad. They would rather be called bad than dumb. So they mask the fact that they don't want to read by just acting out so that the teacher won't call on them. They're too busy being difficult in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Are Are there some children who are doing just fine with reading, just don't have any trouble, and who, when they say they're bored, they actually are bored? Or would you say that mostly what we're talking about is children who are having difficulty with the physical act of reading, and that's really the problem?
In my own experience at the reading group, and I think all of our staff would agree with this, there are so many children who use the bored excuse because they really are struggling with reading. There may be a few children, and we have worked with children who are extremely gifted, and they're not being challenged enough in the classroom. That's something that is really easy to work with in our particular setting, because I think most people know that the reading group requires that the parent attend each instructional session for the last 10 minutes. And as we work with the child and find ways to locate books that they would be interested in, find ways that they can get more involved with the reading process, the parent picks up on some ideas that they can follow through at home. And I always feel so strongly that it's the fact that it's the teamwork that makes all the difference in the world. The child taking charge more, the parent finding ways to relate to the child, the teacher, of course, and it makes for a relatively short-term intervention in many situations like that.
Mm. I think that that's a good point. I would imagine that there are some parents who might be concerned who would think that either this is something that could be a lifelong problem, or that the kind of intervention that you're talking about would have to go on for a long, long time. What you're saying is that in fact, with the right kind of help, you can actually get a child going and kind of get them over the hump in a relatively short period of time. I mean, we may be talking about weeks as opposed to months or years.
Mm-hmm. And you're right, there are some children who need long-term help. And these are children who have some fairly specific areas of difficulty in the speech-language area. Also, some young children who come to us at a fairly early age who are struggling with sounds and who have multiple problems in their development, they really often choose to come for longer periods of time. A lot of parents are surprised when they call to find out that we don't have a set program that starts, you know, on such and such a date and stops 20 lessons down the road. Instead, we suggest 10 sessions, after which you get a written report, and then the teacher in the school, the parent, and the child determines whether the child continues, takes a break, or just discontinues. Mm-hmm.
I should probably introduce again our guest for anyone who has tuned in here. In the last few minutes, we're talking with Marilyn Kay. She's director of the Reading Group in Urbana. And as we have explained, it's an organization that for a number of years now, going back to 1978, has been working with children mostly who have difficulty with language. Could be reading, could be writing, could be with difficulty with hearing and understanding language, all those various kinds of things. And then they do work with kids on an individual basis, trying to decide what sort of strategies can they work with that individual child that will help him or her. And if you have questions, by the way, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. When a child first comes to the reading group, I'm wondering about what sort of evaluation that you do. What do you do at the beginning? Say, if you have a child who they're having difficulty in school, maybe even to the point where they're being disruptive, and parents are kind of got the idea that the problem is that they're having a very difficult time doing the work. That is, either with reading, with writing, with whatever. How do you go about trying to figure out, now, what is going on with this particular child, so that then you can proceed to how it is you will try to develop a program for that child?
When a child first comes to the program, we have a one-hour testing session. It's actually 40 minutes where we spend time with the child in some activities and some testing that is non-threatening, or at least where the stress level really stays low. We really require that for that first session. We then talked to the parents about what we observed as we looked at their word attack skills, their phonemic awareness, their comprehension, writing skills, and spelling. We may give some additional tests if we see some very strong signs of a visual or auditory processing problem. It would be about a 20-minute session with the parents where we're not there just to tell them, okay, we found this out in our testing, but we're there to listen to the parent. They are the source of some very useful information. We see them as experts in a sense because they really see the child in situations that we don't see them. We also expect to hear about some or to see some testing information from the schools. That really helps us then determine which of our instructors should work with that child and what our recommendations and goals should be for either a short-term period or something that may indeed be a longer-term program. We're really lucky at this point to have a community where we have resources. There are so many of our teachers who are really gifted teachers, and that means that they come in with many approaches that are ideally suited for an individual child. And Sunday Cummins and I, who do the testing, watch for those particular learning styles, those particular needs that a child has, and pinpoint just the right teacher for that child. And it's really nice to have a teamwork approach because, frankly, there are some students that I can work with myself very, very well, and others that I think, oh, Andrea is the teacher, or Alice. She works with gifted children, and Sarah is so good with the gifted kid who's having some writing problems. We have someone who's very skilled at working with organizational problems. So after the testing, we can provide the parent with some names of teachers that we would recommend that their child work with. Another thing that I think is really special about this particular town and this particular time, we're hearing a lot of good information about new ways to help children with reading. The research, even the research done at the Center for the Study of Reading, is becoming very, very, it's just such an exciting time to be in the area of reading and discover how we can look at different problems and see that there really are some physiological reasons for some children who are otherwise very bright but who seem not to have the wiring that they're required to have in order to fall into reading in a very easy, natural way.
It does seem that I'm sure if parents think about their own experiences as children, when this seemed to be an easier, less complicated thing, you think about how children learn. First of all, I guess they learn language simply by listening and by imitating. We talk to them, they talk back to us, and that kind of stuff goes on right from very early on, a long time before we ever get that first big cardboard book and we sit them down in our lap and we read, even though we think now they're not going to get anything out of this, but it's a good exercise. So we start with talking to them, they talk back to us, they model us, we go back and forth, and then somewhere along the line we start in this kind of simple-minded way to make the association between words and things. So we show them things, we say, doggy, doggy, as we wave the stuffed dog in their face, somehow in our mind thinking that, well, if we do that enough, they'll get the association between the thing and the word. And then from there, we go to these crazy marks on the paper, and somehow get them this idea that there are sounds, and we're making these sounds, and these marks on the paper represent the sounds. And if we, again, do the same sort of business often enough, I guess we just have this idea that somehow magically in their head, they'll say, oh, I get ya. That thing, that D thing is D. Okay. And, you know, we do that thing and we show them the individual letters and the individual sounds and we put them together first in little words and then in bigger words and somehow magically, eventually they get it. And we have this idea that, oh, well, that's not hard.
It's almost like learning to talk, isn't it? Mm. It's interesting, though, how often there'll be in one family a child who will pick up reading in the most natural way, just like you were saying, and they'll start to pretend read and chatter away as though they were actually reading the book, and they turn the pages just the right way. They go on and learn to read at a very early age as though it just came as naturally as talking. And then another child will be totally puzzled about what these figures, these little letters, really do. And it's often in first and second grade where that frustration really mounts. Mm-hmm. And a parent of a in a family where there are two different children, one who picks it up naturally and one who takes their time and later picks it up in a very carefully learned way. I think that's where the reading group comes in. We really find ways to get through to the child who hasn't learned the more natural way. And certainly with the whole language approach that was so strong for a while and really depended on children learning that natural way to a great extent, we're really moving now into something that has to do more with helping those children who have difficulty with sounds. I think it's a good move. It can be a little dangerous if we start putting too much emphasis on phonics, however.
Uh-huh. Well, we have a couple of callers here we can talk with. Why don't you put on your headphones there, and we will do that. And they're both people who are on cell phones, and we'll just take them in the order they came in, starting with line number one, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. One, you talk about the innovations in the university, and I'm wondering if how you learn what the university knows. Do you go to them? Do they come to you? So that's one question. And two, do you know about the state of reading resources in the public schools, the funding for the students there to have reading help, and how that goes? And then three, I have a young friend who grew up at the Cunningham home, and he's been angry that he didn't learn to read. Now he's grappling with it in his early 20s. And I'm wondering if there were any way you could get a grant to take your services up to Cunningham and work with those kids and that organization. And now I'll get off and let you answer.
Thanks. I'll start with your last question first. You were wondering if there are any grants that would help us work with children from Cunningham. The reading group is located very close to Cunningham. We have worked with children from Cunningham where there have been grants supplied through different programs for children who especially are in foster care or who are about to be adopted. Those funds have been cut way back this year for many agencies, but there are ways to work with these children, and they are a very good group for our program to deal with. The other question you asked was about things that happen in the schools. I'm a classroom teacher by heart. I taught for 11 years, and I loved it. There are some things, though, that happen in the public schools where we know that we've got to get additional help, whether it's medical help, psychological help, or additional help that will break through a barrier that a child has in reading. That's where the reading group comes in. We're not there to take the place of a program like Title I. We're not there to take the place of any existing program, but we're there to assist and fit in with a program that makes sense in the school setting.
And I think the other question is about, she was asking about how it is that you keep up with the kind of research that's being done at the university level on reading.
It goes both ways. A woman who's doing research in the speech and language area came down to the lower level of Lincoln Square, and we bumped into each other, and we just had a very informal talk, and that's one way that we can get information. I wish we could go way back to the 70s and 80s when the university had the Center for the Study of Reading. At that time, we were invited to sit in on their conferences, their research reports, and we were able to go in and pick up reports that were done by researchers there. And Brown was one of my favorites, and many of the things that are being done in the speech and language area are really, really making sense to someone who's not in that area. My training has been in dyslexia and learning disabilities, but I find that information from other sources can be very, very helpful. There's no formal way of exchanging information, but as time goes by, I'm hoping that all of the different agencies, the reading department, the speech language department, the learning disabilities department, and the psychology department, if they can all bring all that good material together and work in a coordinated fashion in some way, I think that we would all benefit, and the children would benefit from that kind of information coming out.
Yeah. I think also one other thing that the caller asked about was what kind of resources there are available in public schools to help children who are having difficulty with reading.
Right now, there's a huge amount of help coming out. I'll just mention one of them, a program in Urbana that I am especially impressed with is the CHRIS program, C-H-R-I-S, and it really has such a good balance of what a child needs in the classroom. We don't use the CHRIS program in our particular area because it's really designed for a group activity, but we draw from it a lot. And a lot of people ask about the reading group, what program do you follow? Do you have the Marilyn Kay way of doing things? And I say, well, if there's a way, it's really eclectic. We take the best of every program, and we try to be familiar enough with what's going on in the schools so that we can dovetail well with what the child may be getting in the classroom or in his special learning disabilities area or Title I program.
We have another caller here. Let's go to line number 2, and this person is also on a cell phone. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I have a question about I'm a pretty avid reader and have been all my life, but occasionally I run into friends or people with children, and I, you know, will bring up some book or something, and I'll hear that, well, I don't read, you know, an adult telling me this, and they have children, and so I immediately ask them, well, you do, you put books in front of your children, and, well, we don't really push it, you know, and that's what, and I've heard this several times that, adults, I don't read. So, well, how do you, well, I watch movies. And that's their answer. Do you find some correlation between these children that can't read or are not very trained in reading, between the parents that don't read?
You ask about correlation. I see both children who come from families where there's a huge amount of reading, books around the house, books in bookcases, trips to the library, trips to Pages for All Ages. And then there are children who don't have any of those benefits through the home. Children from both kinds of homes can have some very puzzling reading problems. That may come as a surprise because everybody says you must get the child reading and having those experiences at home. And I thoroughly agree. And when we have a child, like yesterday, I saw a little girl for a testing session. Found out from the mother that the little girl watches 6 hours of television every day. She watches Nickelodeon and the preteen programs. I was really appalled, and then I saw that she had a stack of books, but they were all about one subject, mm-hmm. Barbie dolls. And right. Those were the only books that she had, but she liked these Barbie doll books, so the mom just kept buying Barbie doll books. Will that child have difficulty? We've got a lot of work to do here to help the child gradually move away from that dependency on listening and watching television so much and reading just one kind of material. Also, the importance of just seeing a mom and a dad reading the newspaper or sitting and reading a little bit every day, that makes a profound impression on a child, because children very young are imitators. So it would be my hope that there would be some way of really encouraging the public through the media to do a lot more at home. But it doesn't necessarily correlate with reading difficulties. Exactly. You see it from families where there's just a lot of good, rich experiences.
Do you think it's possible that these adults that I'm hearing, I don't read, do you think they could have been one of these children at one time that you're talking about that had a difficulty and hit it in some way?
I think that could well be it. Many of the parents of children who come to us, they become relaxed when they come into this space that's not like a school. It's very home-like at the reading group. And somehow they share some of their own experiences. And many of them do say that, you know, they really, really had trouble with reading themselves as children.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Our guest is Marilyn Kay. She's director of the Reading Group in Urbana. It's a nonprofit organization. It's been in Urbana since 1970.
Actually, it started in the basement of Leal School in 1972.
So even before 1972?
Yes. 1972 was the beginning of that nucleus. We had worked at home. Three of us were neighbors, and each one of us had a different area that we were really skilled at. So we just worked out of offices in our own home. Then we moved into Leal School, and we hoped that this funding of a new innovative program would result in something that would continue on. Well, that has continued on, but the schools didn't have the funding because, let's face it, one-on-one can be a very expensive process.
Sure.
So we then moved into space at the First Presbyterian Church in Urbana, the basement, where we stayed for a good many summers, still working out of our homes. So in a sense, it's over 30 years, but officially that little The Reading Group started in 1978 when we finally named the group.
So to what we have today over there in Lincoln Square, this was a long trip, and there were a lot of stops along the way. I see. All right. Let's talk with another caller. Again, someone here on the cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I just want to say, first of all, I've done some work with the Reading Group. I work for a liquor distributor, and we donated some wine to a brunch that they've done for fundraising the last couple of years. So I think it's a great group, and I'm really happy with the work they're doing. But I wanted to comment about the little girl who was doing the reading all about the Barbie dolls. I wanted to say, I think the best thing to do is just to buy that girl more Barbie doll stuff to read and just encourage that. When I was a kid, I was addicted to comic books. And my grandmother and my mother and my aunts all kept telling my father, you got to get her to read other stuff. You got to get her to read other stuff. He said, you know, I don't care if she reads the cereal box. Just let her do what she wants. Eventually she'll come around. And even when I was in grade school, I had done, I kind of got addicted to sports, and people tried to get me to stop doing that, and my father even went to the school and told them, leave her alone. And, you know, eventually I moved on to other things, and I read a lot now, a lot of subjects. But I think what I do is to just encourage that little girl on what she wants and develop that and kind of hope that'll get her away from the TV a little bit.
I think you're... suggestions are good, and I'm so glad you called. That Milo's event was so special. Thank you again. Wasn't that fun? Oh, it was wonderful. The little girl at her first lesson received a little spiral notebook from the reading group that had some decorations on the cover, Barbie doll. She loved it. And yes, we're going to use those books, but to gradually, eventually, help her move into something that will be will give her more of a variety so that in her schoolwork she can respond to some good lessons there.
Yep.
Yes, I think the mother did a good job in seeing that suddenly this kid really liked a certain book. And then
yeah,
what we
need...
Yeah,
as long as I can find something she likes.
Uh-huh.
Well, just want to tell you what a good job you're doing, and I'll hang up now and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much for the call. I want to go back, you know, back in sort of the first half of the program. I laid out this kind of simple-minded layperson's take on how it is that people read. And you explained that, in fact, that there were some children who seemed to take very naturally to the process and didn't seem to have any difficulty right at the beginning making the connection between the marks on the page and the sounds that they represent. But that, and in fact, in the same family, you could have one child that it was like a duck to water, no difficulty, and you could have another child for whom it just was such a mystery, they just didn't get it. Well, what it was they were supposed to be getting out of this black thing on the page and how that corresponds to sounds. What do you do if you have a child like that, that can't seem to make the connection between the symbol and that sound that goes with it?
What we found that works really well at the reading group is something called multi-sensory instruction. And even though it sounds like you're adding an element that makes it more complicated, actually when you're teaching a child about sounds and relating a sound to a symbol, the very best way to do that seems to be to help the child touch and feel the sound. Now, that sounds strange. I should say touch and feel an apple for a banana for B, a cat for C. And each time there's a sound, a basic sound, they can also picture something that they know well that has that beginning sound, like the turtle for T. And once they have that additional part added to it, and then they also trace the letter very carefully in a sand tray or write it very large on a chalkboard, where they learn through feeling and through tactile kinesthetic experiences, they can really move that hand in a way that helps them process visually the letter. And then as they say the sound, as they, let's take the letter T, they're making the T, T, and as they draw it, they say that sound. When they can do that, it seems to get into the memory system in a much stronger way than if you're just saying, look at this letter, this says B, or look at this picture. You may have a picture of an apple in an alphabet book, and alphabet books are wonderful, by the way. But take an apple out of the refrigerator, put it in the child's hand, and that is so much stronger. So we find that we can move a child over past a barrier, actually, by bringing in the sense of touch and that sense of seeing and feeling sometimes an object to help them understand the sounds. And then, of course, we want them to also understand how to manipulate sounds in words. So we may use those same objects, or we could use letters, little plastic magnetic letters. I prefer using the objects for a while at least. And then the child learns to put those in an order that actually makes a word, like the turtle, the apple, and the pig become t, a, p, or tap. And by manipulating those sounds within words, they're beginning to get a stronger sense of how to be a good speller and how to be a better reader, so that they can really not just guessing by golly through a word, but know how a word works.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that a parent could do with
a
child.
A lot of parents have come to our workshops or have observed that last 10 minutes. They go home and they collect their own little toys and start doing it at home, and then things happen fast.
All right, very good. We have someone else to talk with. This is a caller in Mahomet on our line number one right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a two-year-old who was recently diagnosed speech apraxic, and I've done just a little bit of reading about it, and it seems like one of the difficulties that children who are not speaking have is learning to read. And I'm wondering if there's a way to sort of skip the verbal part, that first part of learning to read where you pronounce everything out loud, and just get to sort of the internal reading.
I don't have a good answer for you there. You may want to speak to someone in the speech language department or a speech language therapist at your school. I don't think that a two-year-old, did you say two years old?
He's two and a half.
Uh-huh. I think that give him, you know, just giving him a lot of experiences with having you talk to him, and certainly having him do what he is able to do with speech, have a good speech language pathologist to work on the apraxia, and then go on at a later time to deal with reading.
Have you worked with apraxic kids? At the reading group?
Yes. We have two people on staff who are in the speech language area. We usually work with children at a later age, because our area, of course, is the reading group, and it's when they are ready to be given those pre-reading activities that we would start to work with a child. And you might want to contact us again in about a year.
Yeah, I'm sort of looking down the road.
I hope you keep us in mind, because we can be of special help in helping any child at an early preschool age that needs some form of fine motor help, speech language help, or just help because they have difficulty with attention. Those three areas, I think, are especially strong in our program.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And again, other questions are welcome. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. We're talking with Marilyn Kay, director of the Reading Group in Urbana. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You mentioned a little bit earlier that a particular interest of yours, personally and professionally, has been dyslexia, and we've certainly talked about that before on the program. And I apologize for using the word disability, because I know for a number of reasons you don't like to use the word. But I guess when we think about learning disabilities, particularly associated with reading, probably the first one that really got a lot of press, a term that people would recognize, was indeed dyslexia. Although, again, at the beginning, I think your layperson's understanding of it was much more simple than what it turns out to be. A much more complicated thing than people, I think, imagine it to be. So maybe over time people have started to understand a little bit better what it is. Is there anything really new now on dyslexia?
Well, the new part is that they're showing through magnetic resonance imaging that there actually are some very basic differences between a person with dyslexia and a person who reads normally. Mm-hmm. The wiring is different. They're able to show different parts of the brain lighting up, and the child with dyslexia often has a very different pattern. the part that I like best about their research, especially the part done through a group at Yale, Shaywitz and her Dr. Shaywitz and her brother are doing some remarkable things with research. They're showing that after instruction, and they list all of the approaches that work well with dyslexia, the reading group uses each one of those with different students. And they show that after appropriate help, the lighting system in the brain or those different connections become very much like the normal reader.
It actually changes. You can actually see the way the brain working changes.
And I think the best part of this, and it may take a long time, especially in the Midwest where dyslexia is looked upon as, oh, that's just a medical term or it's a catch-all phrase, but I think we need to be alert to some of the research at least. And I'm not saying you have to put that label on a person, but you need to be able to recognize when a child needs a multisensory approach. And that's what they're finding really does make the difference.
We have another caller here. Let's talk with someone in Champaign. Line one. Hello. Is a caller there?
Is it me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
This is sort of a piggyback on the question about the connection with the schools. Just from personal experience, when one of my sons was in, well, he didn't actually learn to read until probably around third grade, and we were connected up in the schools, and we were recommended to come to the reading group, but, you know, this was sort of our first experience, and we really didn't know what that would mean for us, and didn't follow through. But I guess my question is, for parents now who, you know, are just in part of this process, who might not have the financial support to come to the reading group, do the schools have information about how parents might be able to bring their child to the reading group and, you know, sort of make those connections? And I know there were all kinds of components for us, and certainly finances was one of them, but transportation and scheduling and all those kinds of things were components. So that's kind of a broad question. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you for asking that question. We have a program that provides scholarships for children. And if you're from a fairly low-income family, we can provide a full scholarship. We also have some half scholarships available. Last year, we were able to give 70 scholarships. This year, because of the economy and because of cutbacks in agencies, we have been able to give far fewer. But our goal is to reach 100 scholarships a year, and that doesn't quite meet all the needs, of course. So yes, when someone wants to be a part of the reading group, they should not think, oh, it's just too expensive to have one-on-one from highly specialized people. You should call and ask what's available. Many of the teachers are well aware of our program, and they can help you fill out the forms and make sure that they get to us in good time, especially for the summer program, because that's a time when we see quite a few children from the schools referred by teachers. I'm glad you asked that question. We have, at this time of year, something called the Gift of Reading, and that's a program where, at a much lower cost, grandparents, parents, and friends can provide tuition for 6 sessions at about 20% off, which is a nice introductory session for a child coming into the program. Or people can provide $250 as a gift of reading for a child who is from a very needy family. And we have a long waiting list right now of children who are really needing to come for one-on-one help. So thank you for asking that question, and I'm sorry that we weren't able to help you when your child was 8 years old.
Well, it's been a long time ago. He actually reads quite well now, but it took us learning a lot, too. Anyway, but thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. We're coming down here for our last couple of minutes, and if somebody had a particular question, they should call right now. Do not wait till the last minute, and we can get you in. And we've touched on a number of things. Is there anything that we have neglected that you'd like to make sure that we do?
Well, perhaps I could just tell you something that is happening on Saturday.
Sure.
As you know, we have special events every once in a while, and Saturday at 9 o'clock to noon at First Federal Bank on Neal Street in Champaign, we are having a bake sale, and Dan and Paula Irwin are going to have Christmas breads and special cookies and Stalin and ginger snaps, all kinds of interesting things that people have gotten used to in the farmer's market, because they're there every summer in the farmer's market. Dan and Paula have done this almost every year at Christmas time. So we invite you to come to First Federal Bank on Saturday morning and enjoy the beautiful array of breads and baked goods.
Okay. We had a question, and I just want to, because we have been talking about children, I guess I just want to be clear that as you generally do work with children at the reading group, but if, for example, we had an earlier caller was talking about someone, a young guy who was in his 20s who was having difficulty reading, you could work with adults as well? As
we work with adults, and, you know, again, they should call and ask about the program. And I had someone call just 2 days ago who her brother had come years ago. And she said, you know, I should have come too, but I was able to hide my problem. And now I really want to learn to read better because I want to go on and have a career. I have a 2-month-old child. I want to be able to, you know, be a good mother, a good role model for her. And I thought, oh, that's such an interesting chance for us to work with adults. We learn a lot as we work with adults. And we hope that we can be of help to this young lady who has some special goals in her life.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for being with us once again.
We appreciate
the time. Marilyn Kay is director of the Reading Group in Urbana. They're located in Lincoln Square Mall. They are in the phone book if you would like to call and find out more about that organization, the services that they have available. And it's right there. And again, thanks very much.
Thank you.